Now, my friends, would you turn in the Bible to Judges chapter 14, where we had our reading? It's useful to turn to the scriptures because we don't just peck away at one verse. We like often to spread ourselves over a passage, as we will today. Chapter 14 of Judges. You know how the books of the Bible go? If you don't know them yet, it'll take you a quarter of an hour, perhaps 20 minutes, to learn them off by heart, right the way through Genesis, Exodus, and so on, right through to the book of Revelation. Shouldn't take long. Of course, the younger you are, the quicker you'll learn it. Judges chapter 14. I was watching on television a tennis match yesterday. The two top women players in the world were battling it out there on Wimbledon center court. And one rally in particular riveted me. We saw it several times during the course of the day. We saw it during the match. Then we saw the replay of it immediately that the rally was over. We saw it at the end of that particular game yet again. We saw it at the end of the match. We saw it again in the replay. And then we saw it again in the replay of the replay. And I kept thinking, because I wanted one person to win that rally, it was a brilliant rally, I kept thinking at the end, if only she could just get it over the net. And when I saw the rally for the umpteenth time last night, I said, now here's your chance, just lift it. She couldn't do it. It went into the top of the net. And it is such a sad thing when you want to correct the video, to edit it, to get it right as it ought to be. And so you find yourself often after an event like that saying to yourself, if only. And the Bible is full of these if onlys. And that's the way we feel, honestly, about the giant man, Samson, as we come towards the end of our series of studies in the book of Judges. One more study to go, and that's next week. We long that it could have been a better story back in the 12th and 11th centuries BC, when Israel had no king, when, as we're told in the narrative, everybody did precisely as they thought was right in their own eyes, and when the purity of Israel had crumbled under the alien pressures of Canaanite culture and worship. If only it had been different. If only we could have edited the story and said, look, Samson, you've got a second chance. Try again. If only the video covering this dismal 200-year period in Israel's history could have been altered. If only these judges, these judicial and military leaders, rude instruments for a rude age, could have managed it better. But no, we can't alter the tape. It all happened as set down. And in this next leader we consider, Samson, we're faced with perhaps the biggest puzzle of them all. We've moved on a generation or so since Jephthah, whom we were considering last week. Three more judges had come and gone, and Israel's fortunes were at an all-time low under the Philistine oppression. And then Samson is born. Born to a barren woman. His birth is announced by an angel, chapter 13 and verse 3. He is to be a Nazarite, having vows taken for him at birth, which were to consecrate him in a special way, no strong drink, no contact with death, hair to remain uncut. He was to be dedicated to the Lord for special service. So, a special instrument, it seems, is being raised up. Now, here lies the puzzle of it. We hardly seem to read of Samson praying or speaking of God, not until the very end. We never read of him organizing Israel or acting in a judicial capacity as a judge. He gets no army together, as did Gideon. Samson's is a one-man show. Yes, he did discomfort the Philistines, but Samson impresses us more by his titanic strength, his vulgarity, his violence, and his playboy image. His boasts, his bellows of laughter, his riddles, look at verse 14, of our chapter. And he said to them, out of the eater came something to eat, out of the strong came something sweet. A riddle that nobody could answer, because the answer lay within his own skull. No one could answer it until Samson's wife finally prized him out of it, got him to blab. He loved riddles. But Samson was himself a riddle, an enigma. He's listed among the heroes of faith, enumerated in Hebrews chapter 11, along with those others, but it's hard to see where the greatness lay, if any. It seems that in Samson we have to recognize a man who failed to live up to his early vows, a man who never realized his potential, and in whom resided a bundle of contradictions. So in Samson we see what happens when, first, when advantages are never consolidated. When advantages are never consolidated. Of all the judges, I think Samson probably had the best start of all. Gideon, ahead before his time, was a nonentity. Jephthah was illegitimate. But Samson's birth is associated with divine intervention, an announcement from an angel, the endowment of fertility to a barren woman, and the head start of a Nazarite vow. Do you know about the Nazarite vows? Nazarite, from a Hebrew word nazir, if I've pronounced that right, meaning separated or consecrated. We read about the Nazarites in Numbers chapter 6 and verses 1 to 21. Normally, the Nazarite vow was taken for a limited period of special consecration to God. It involved abstaining from alcoholic drink, from grapes even, and raisins. The hair was to remain uncut. There was to be no contact with a dead body. It was a life of holy dedication, or a period of holy dedication. Samson's consecration was to be one for life. His parents recognized this. They brought him up in accordance with the Nazarite vows. Without doubt, they never forgot the angelic promise of Judges 13 and verse 5. The boy shall be a Nazarite to God from birth, and he shall begin to deliver Israel from the hand of the Philistines. There was the promise. There was the advantage from early days. Just as we've had, for those of you listening to the recording of this message, a baptism earlier in this service of young Shireen, it's a good advantage. Praying parents, godparents who pledged themselves, this mark of God upon her, it's an advantage. The riddle of Samson is that with all his early advantages and with the unequivocally clear call of God to him from his first days, he ended up as a playboy. His advantages were never consolidated. Look at chapter 14, verse 2, would you? Then he came up and told his father and mother, I saw one of the daughters of the Philistines at Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife. Get her for me. Ladies and gentlemen, there are two kinds of people in the world. Those who are here to give service, and those whose overriding desire is to be served, to suck from life and from society every possible benefit and experience for themselves. Samson's life faces us in a fresh way with those alternatives. What are you here for? What are you here for? What am I here for? What are you wanting to do with the life that you've been given? The opportunity that is yours in the time that you have. Get her for me. In that sentence is crammed the whole story. Samson was breaking not only the tradition of his people, but also the divine law about mixed marriages. This wasn't an issue of race, far from it. It was a spiritual issue. Exodus chapter 34, verse 16, issues the warning against alien contracts, which, and I quote, make your sons to play the harlot after their gods. That's why we have the prohibition about the mixed marriages. Not because of race, but because of the spiritual issue. There are other signs that Samson's Nazarite vow meant very little to him. The incident with the lion, as we see further on, his subsequent removal of the honey from its dried-out carcass in verses 8 and 9, with that infringement of the Nazarite prohibition about contact with a dead body. It didn't mean too much to him. So in Samson, we see what happens when advantages are never consolidated. It's possible we have a good start. God has given us all advantages of one sort or another. It isn't automatic that all is going to flow on from there. We don't live in a determinist world. We are moral people. We can make choices. We can accept or we can refuse. We can consolidate or not. It's up to us. That's the challenge of it all. It's not a case of what will be. It is the will of God. Not at all. God can have his plan and set it. He can give us the start. And then the responsibility is up to, it's ours. Am I going to follow his will? Am I going to step into his pattern for my life? In Samson, we see what happens when advantages are never consolidated. Secondly, we see in Samson what happens when endowments are never harnessed. Here is God's appointed leader of Israel. But whom precisely is Samson leading? There's no army, no organization, no administration, no judicial function, as would have been expected of one of the judges. No wonder the surprise of Samson's parents in verse 3, when he decides on a Philistine wife, because here is God's leader. Why the compromise? Why is he not getting his wife from among their own people, from their own culture and religion? Why is he not getting his act together? When is the campaign beginning? In Samson, we have a case of unharnessed powers. His endowments, certainly on the physical realm, were prodigious. It's also very clear that by his own brute force alone, he was able to demoralize the Philistines. It could be done. But little of his power and ability, little of that was integrated and put together. Now, the great leaders of the world have had this matter of goal orientation sorted out quite early in life. They get nowhere until it is sorted out. God's first rule seems to be order. It was so in the creation. And when that comes into a person's life, this integration of character and ability, this binding of energy and ability and power in with one great purpose, and especially when that purpose is given by God, the result is a virtually unstoppable force. I quote from John Wesley, "Whenever I see one or a thousand men running into hell, be it in England, Ireland, or France, yea, in Europe, Asia, Africa, or America, I will stop them if I can. But though I am always in haste, I am never in a hurry, because I never undertake any more work than I can go through with perfect calmness of spirit." Where did Wesley get that from? Oh, we know. We know where he got it from. Quite early on, he and his brother resolved together, we are going to change the course of history. God had come into his life, and he submitted his will to God and allowed his energies to be harnessed by this one great overriding goal and aim for his life. He was given time to do it, and he did it. The reverberations of it still we feel today in our land. When the whole thing comes together, you can get a virtually unstoppable force. Samson would have been an incredible if it had all come together. It did not come together. Samson was a contradiction. The ability was there and the energy was there, but the effect was one of confusion and disintegration. Sometimes if a person's life has no real underlying aim or order, or even if there's illness maybe that comes in, and that can happen, I know, and a collapse takes place, sometimes the friends may say he had a nervous breakdown, whereas perhaps the truer assessment might have been he overworked because he was having a nervous breakdown. We have to apply this and think it through for ourselves. What are we here for? How are our gifts and endowments to be used? What are your gifts? What are your endowments? It's worth thinking it out. What are my resources? What have I been given to do here in this world? Are you good with people? Are you good with family? Are you good with study? Are you good with your hands? Are you a creative kind of person that can be used in drama? What kind of person are you? Are you good with money? Some people are brilliant with money. Sir John Lang, whose family business achieved international fame for integrity and skill in the building industry. He was involved in the building of houses and airfields and the M1 motorway, many other constructive enterprises. Most of his fortune he gave away. Churches have sprouted all over our land because of his generosity. It's an amazing thing he did. An integrated person with one great aim, living for God. As early as 1940, he was giving away £20,000 a year, and when he died in his 99th year, Sir John Lang, his net estate for himself, his net estate came out at, do you know what? £371. A man who got it all together. The result was a great force for God from one person. An integration. That's what we're looking for. So we learn from the riddle of Samson. In him we see what happens. First, when advantages are never exploited and consolidated. Secondly, when endowments are never harnessed, the result is confusion and lack of achievement. Then thirdly, we see what happens when passions are never controlled. Get her for me. There it is, in a nutshell. Yes, as we shall see in our next sermon, one solitary woman could bring him down in ruins. Not this particular woman. There was to be another woman later, Delilah. Further, Samson not only broke his Nazarite vow by coming into contact with a dead body, but he himself became a killer, and a callous one at that. For the sake of paying off his bet, following the feast that we read about in the second half of our chapter, he uses his great strength, following on from just an exchange of riddles, to kill 30 people so that he can use the spoils from them to pay off those who beat him in the game of guess the riddle. Undisciplined passions, where you have sensuality and callousness combined. That was Samson. He was only living for himself and for the gratification of his senses. He may have been called by God, and it certainly was so that God actually used him. But he was nevertheless living for himself. There are tragedies in the spiritual life. We are not invulnerable. Let us never imagine that because God has a toehold in our life, that from then on we're going to soar on to victory and effectiveness. We are not. Not unless there is this discipline and willingness to submit to his will and plan. Samson was very strong. But Samson was very weak. What a feeble man he was when you really look at it. Now it says in the Bible that Moses was a meek man. It sounds as though that means he was a kind of milksop, feeble. But no, meek surely there means in the sense of being controlled. He had great energy and it was all harnessed for God. He had great abilities. They were dedicated to God's service.
He had great powers.
They were disciplined. Moses was a meek man. He was like a wild racehorse, but that had been tamed and was harnessed and controlled, and therefore of use. There are two kinds of people in our world. Those who have come here to serve, to give of their energies, to leave the world a better place, they determine to do so. Or there are those who have come to be served, to be fed, to be ministered to, sucking life out of this world for themselves. Here's the contradiction man, Samson. How do you solve the riddle? Can we solve the riddle of this man who liked to ask riddles and then would pay for them by killing people? Do you find verse 4 a puzzle? His father and mother did not know that it was from the Lord, for he was seeking an occasion against the Philistines. God was extraordinarily in that event. How could he have been? I believe that's an editorial comment, of course, that comes later, as the editor of the story looks back, makes his point, his historical interpretation, and says, yes, God was in that. God did it in the most extraordinary way, use Samson, even though he had only a tiny finger hold in his life. It was part of God's overruling of history. Just as God could use Balaam, could use Cyrus, could use even Pontius Pilate, could use Judas. So he can use in his ultimate sovereign purposes a Samson, even though he hasn't got it all together. So Samson even scrapes through into Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 32, where he's listed with other people in the heroes of faith. We can hardly believe it, but he's there. Why is it so? I'm sure there's an explanation, and the explanation comes in words that I find in Psalm 18, verse 35, where it says of another leader, said by another leader, David of old, he says, "Thy gentleness hath made me great." What made David great? What delivered him from all the problems of his enemies? God's gentleness. You see, David was a murderer. David was a womanizer. David hadn't got it all together, in spite of his great powers. So later he comes out with that testimony, "Thy gentleness hath made me great." God's dealings with him, God's accommodation of him, God's compensations, God's forgiveness, God's overall ultimate sovereign purposes in David's life. So we see it in Samson's. "Thy gentleness hath made me great." So if there was anything good that came out of Samson's life, it wasn't because of Samson. It was because of God's mercy and his gentleness and his sovereign purposes. So we see in this man of contradictions a riddle. We see what happens when advantages are never consolidated, when endowments are never harnessed, when passions are never controlled. No, we can't alter the video. We can't edit it. It's there now forever. But surely we can learn from these mistakes. It's true of your life. You cannot alter now what has gone ahead of your life already. All the mistakes that I've made and you've made, all the wrong turnings we've taken, we can't go back. We can't start muttering, "Oh, if only." Don't do that. Don't let us live in the past with bitter self-recrimination. Having got the past forgiven, let us go on and learn from our early mistakes and say, "Where did I go wrong? I went wrong because of that and that and that." There's always a next time. There's going to be a next time. God, give me grace and strength for the future, that I get my act together because God is in it, and I submit my energies and my life to him and allow him to be the leader, to be the one who brings integration, strength, purpose into it all. We learn from the past. We can see how God and his extraordinary sovereign will can make some sense out of the riddles of people as disintegrated as Samson. There are two kinds of people in our world. Let's pray for a moment. Teach us, Lord, from your word, that our lives may be submitted to your great will. Thank you for dealing with us as individuals. Thank you for giving us our unique identity and powers and energies. O God, we wish hundreds of us to be effective in your service, whatever our calling is in this life. Help us this day to submit our lives to you all over again, to focus our minds once again on the great objective, for your name's sake. Amen.